This is the Empowered Caregiver. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here are the Empowered Caregivers and your hosts, Kristen Voss and Liza Hellenbrand.
Hello, everybody. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Liza.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. Today, we're going to get real about some of our own thoughts and experiences in order to support each other, our fellow family caregivers, and ourselves on this journey. Up until like even a second ago, the stress today has been overwhelming. And so Liza and I want to chit chat about that. I'm working with some wonderful teachers and therapists to learn more about DBT. It's called Dialectical Behavior Therapy. A topic I'm really struggling with in this work is radical acceptance. So I need to chat about that, Liza. How about you?
I hear you there. I cannot wait for you to enlighten me on that topic because boy, do I need it. But what I was really struggling with was what the heck is wrong with me? Is this stress? Is this anxiety? Is this overwhelm? What is it? So I did what everybody does when they need answers, right? They go to Google. And I found a wonderful article on WonderMind, which is a mental health resource that Lauren Del Truco wrote back in September of 22. So that is what I want to talk today about, going into what is the difference between stress, anxiety, and overwhelm. And it was interesting because I learned a lot from this article. It was well written and funny, which I love. But before we get started, I got to say that I am jealous that you are out in sunny LA where the sun is shining and the air is clear.
It's clearer than it is in Wisconsin. It's crazy. I'm getting emails and texts about the air quality in Wisconsin. So then I went on and checked, and yeah, it's worse there than it is here in LA, even though historically LA's got worse air, but not right now.
I know. I thought of that when I thought, oh gosh, Kristen's enjoying the clean air in LA, said no one ever. But you know, it's true. And when I go out, I get like this prickly feeling in my throat. I don't know if that has to do with it. I'm not a high risk factor. I don't think, but it is. There's definitely a layer of smog or fog or what have you here. So lucky to be there. But now, what has been stressing me out? The topic of stress. And I just want to refer to this article of Lauren Del Curros because she wrote it really down to earth. It says, what makes stress stress? And it's really that stress is caused by an actual event, something that you have to deal with right now. Not a future situation that might come up someday, but something that requires a stressor. And that came from Nicole Hayes, a PhD.
Yeah, and I thought when I was reading the article too, it really struck me because it was the purpose of the article is to help us understand the differences and the similarities between stress, anxiety, and overwhelm, right?
Right, right.
And the way I understood the stress one is that it's what's happening now.
Now, yes. Yeah. So I was kind of reflecting and I'm like, I can't say that I have a super stressful situation going on right now. We did buy a little cabin and putting it together has been stressful and fun. But then I thought in regards to the caregiver standpoint, when does the stress end? When are you not in a stressful situation right now?
Exactly. I think that's part of why it becomes chronic stress.
Right. Yeah.
Is that their stressors are, you know, one immediate problem might get solved, but then there's another one that's going to come up soon after related to either your care recipient or your role as one of your roles and identities being a caregiver, right? So for me, I struggle with, okay, I've got to solve this problem of paperwork that needs to be turned in, because guess what? Nicole's going to move to her own supported apartment.
Oh, wow. That is awesome.
I don't think I've had a chance to tell you this yet. And so, so exciting, because I'm going to get a little taste of more independence and freedom. And so is she, which is really important. I keep reminding myself that this isn't just about me. It's also about her. And she's really indicating that she's ready to have some space and some autonomy. So I'm excited about it, but talk about stressors. Now there's all this paperwork that I haven't done yet. And then there's going to be figuring out how to actually have the process happen and then actually make it happen. You know, so there's one stress after another. And then I keep thinking about, what's my role going to be in all this, right? A couple friends have asked, now, are you going to be required to see her every day? And I'm like, well, I don't think so. There's nobody who's going to be in charge of me, yet that's a new stress, right? How are we going to change this role? And what I thought was interesting from that article is that then I could start to future trip, right? If I sat here and started going, what's my new role going to be? And that, to me, future tripping, I take that term from my sister-in-law, is anxiety.
Right. And that is exactly what this article goes on to say, that unlike stress, anxiety is all the dark, ominous clouds of what if. When you're stressed, for example, you could be stressed about a current work project, but it's the anxiety about your overall job performance or the future of your career and so on and so forth. So anxiety, definitely, I check that box.
Yeah. Well, can you identify what's going on for you right now in regards to stress versus anxiety, or stress, anxiety, and caregiving?
I think the stress, when I was thinking about it, like I said, I'm not sure I'm really there. I don't have a lot of stressful situations. But, you know, for example, I am the one that's in charge of Caden's schedule and his work schedule and doing all the communication, because he's not there yet. And so we got this cabin and we were hoping to spend the 4th of July week there. Guess what I forgot to do? I forgot to request off for Caden. And of course, nobody's wanting to work 4th of July.
Right.
So they have him scheduled like 8-hour days. Yeah, every day. So that was stressful. And now it's like, okay, how are we going to do the back and forth? How are we going to make this work? So on and so forth. But the anxiety for me, I think, is a lot of just... What am I forgetting? What is, you know, what else has to be done? And I know it's a lot about the what could possibly go wrong. And that's kind of a given for me. You're good at pointing that out in me. It's so embedded in me. I don't even see it, I think, at this point.
Well, it sounds like I'm critical then. Do I point that out to you too much?
You don't point it out to me too much, and it's helpful because because it's obvious. Because one thing about stress is anxiety is it's harder to shake than stress, and it tends to manifest in worrisome thoughts that stick around. And I'm quoting this article again, and it can even pop up. Maybe you can help me with this, because I didn't quite understand this. It says, sometimes anxiety can even pop up in the absence of an external stressor.
Oh, yeah, I can totally help you with that. That means that, because as you were talking, I was actually thinking, for me, what I'm discovering, because I didn't really understand how profound my anxiety was until just the last couple of years. We're looking back, meaning family and like longtime friends, and we're like, oh, yeah, when you would do this, that's a form of anxiety, when you would do that. So I think for me, what that means more specifically is that I've got like a low, I'm not a cook. What is that called? A slow boil? Right?
Sure.
Or low boil, like where it's just like, it's not bing when you're trying to make a pot of pasta is what I'm envisioning. Right.
Right.
And it's not bubbling over, but it's maybe simmering, or it's just kind of bubbling real low, but it's there. That to me is my anxiety. And so I don't need an external factor like a stressful situation of, oh, I locked the rental car keys in the car today. So that was a stressor. That didn't tap into my anxiety, though. My anxiety is always just kind of percolating in the back around, am I making the right decisions about my future career. I mean, you and I are trying to take this business on. I think we have a lot of anxiety around that because there hasn't been a lot of clarity. It's not that we have this external stressor triggering us today, but we don't really know where this company is going. We don't really know how we're going to put this in with other jobs. Like one of the reasons why the lake house is stressing you out is because you want to make it a rental property.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, how are we going to do this balancing? What is the future going to look like? I told my friend here that I work for in California. I was like, okay, well, we need to have my future all figured out by the end of the week. And she was like, what? And we're college roommates. And she's like, okay, this is a flashback to college when you would get off the phone with your dad and you'd be like, okay, you guys, I need to create a whole flow chart with all of my plans the next 4 to 10 years for my dad, because he's saying to me, what is your objective, young lady? I am not helping you get through college in order to just let you keep partying. Right? Yeah. So I didn't want to get in trouble and I wanted him to keep paying for college. So I was like, I need a flow chart. I need a flow chart. And that kind of messaging, I think, has really factored into this ongoing anxiety in the back of my mind about what is the future holding and what am I supposed to do with my future? And I can compartmentalize, but I can also tap into it pretty quickly. And it shows up as a physical thing. I think that's the last thing we probably want to talk about in this segment is the physical manifestations of stress and anxiety.
Yeah. And she had written here that, so anxiety looks like rumination, worrying, and continued racing thoughts. And physically you might feel it, heart pounding, fluttering feeling in your chest or sick to your stomach.
And I liked how she pointed out later that some of those symptoms can also be what you feel when you're excited, right? The butterflies in the stomach, and just that kind of you're revving up in your system. And so it's important to check in, is this excitement or is this anxiety? And I'm getting a much better sense of that because I ruminate all the time about people, about choices, about trips. I just am like, how am I going to get to the ocean? Oh yeah, I'm in California, right? How am I going to get to the other side of the world? And I can sit there and just lose hours on, I was supposed to be an adventurer and why am I not doing these things? So
yeah,
that to me is where, I mean, I got to have a sense of humor about it too, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. Once you catch yourself, which awareness is step one. But what I really want to talk about when we come back in both regards to stress and anxiety is how do you deal with it?
Yeah. Well, and we also have to distinguish what's overwhelm, because I think that's where you are, sister. We'll be back right in just a short moment to discuss more about stress, anxiety, and overwhelm.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Liza Helen Brand, and I'm here with my co-host, Kristen Boss. And today we are talking about the difference between stress, anxiety, overwhelm. And then Kristen is going to share some great information on things that we can really do to help ourselves. But speaking of help ourselves, I just want to go back to this article that I was reading in Wonder Mind by Lauren Del Turco, which who knows if I'm saying her name right or wrong. Nobody's here to correct me, so I'm loving loving that.
I bet.
Yeah, but it's good to know on how the difference on how to deal with them, because they're different. They take different response measures. And when it comes to stress, with stress being an event, a stressor, then the greatest tool that you can do is plan. Involves externalizing and planning, which can help you reduce your mental load. So whether that is breaking up big tasks into small tasks or creating a daily routine, anything that helps you get more organized, when you feel more organized and on top of things, your stress goes down. Now, when you have ADD, like I have ADD, that in and of itself is a challenge, right?
We'll talk about that for a second. How come?
Well, because planning and organizing and ADD, I don't think always go hand in hand.
I know, but I'm asking you to like break that down for those of us in the audience who don't have ADD, right? Or we might be having care recipients that have ADD. So when you have ADD, why is organizing and planning challenging?
Well, that is a good question. But I think that it's challenging because, well, it's challenging first and foremost to stay on task to do it. Right.
Okay.
You know, how are you going to, you execute a plan and then you have to stay focused and stay on top of that plan.
Okay.
So
is the challenge making the plan, like making the to-do list or taking the big task and breaking it down, or it's executing what you've come up with?
Well, for me personally, it's the executing, because, you know, it's squirrel and then you're sidetracked or you're doing something and then you come across something else that needs to be done. So it's really the execution part of it. I feel, as somebody that has ADD, that makes it a challenge. But I also feel that when I do create a plan or a to-do list or whatever, it does lower my stress. So working on it and sticking to it, you know, that is practice. And there's tools out there that can help you, you know, timers and different things, what have you, to help you stay on tasks. But of course, when you go into something and you have it planned out and you know what your expectations are, you're going to be less stressed than if you don't.
Right. Right, exactly. And I think that's so interesting because we know that, but for whatever reason, we as the global we are still challenged with taking those big tasks and breaking them down or sitting and making the to-do list, right? It's like, I don't understand why, not you particularly, and I don't think it has to do with ADHD, but why do we as humans not do the things that we know we should do to help ourselves?
Well, I think
you might not have that answer. Yeah, I think that's something that they've been contemplating since the beginning of time, like Plato, Aristotle.
I am right. I feel like so. Like my kid just came and asked me about sex or something. Like, Well, I think, you know, part of it is you're going against the norm, right? You're creating new habits. And so that has some resistance attached to it. And some of it, I think, when you don't do your to-dos, is going a little deeper and asking the question, why? What may be triggering? What are you avoiding? What is, you know, bringing up feelings you don't want to deal with?
Right. I think that avoiding is really key. I think for me, sometimes if I stop and say, okay, why am I letting this event or this stressor rule my moments, right? And it's because when I go to do those tasks, I'm either going to feel like I can't do them. I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for. Like this is asking me to perform in a way that I'm not very good at. And I don't
competent.
Like to do. There we go. Competent. I don't like to look incompetent. And so I spend a lot of my days avoiding things, maneuvering things, some might argue manipulating things in order to not have to do things that I'm not competent at, because I really have a strong ego and I like to feel good about what I can do. And so I like to only do the things that I can do well. Unfortunately, that doesn't involve all the things that you have to do as a human being and then also as a caregiver,
right?
So I do think that's a really good point, that if I'm trying to figure out, and if other people who are listening are trying to figure out, why are we not just dealing with the stressors? It's asking yourself, what is it? What is it, the feelings that you're trying to avoid?
It's a great place to start, for sure. Yeah.
What about anxiety? How do we deal with anxiety?
Well, anxiety, because it's ruminating and thinking of things in the future, is really to get yourself grounded, bring yourself back to the present moment. And that's where the things like the deep breaths and the meditation or journaling or things that, just basically help you feel grounded is the key thing when you feel the anxiety. And I think I definitely am getting better at that. I think it's still difficult, especially for caregivers who have done this year after year after year, to know what in the heck they're feeling or to even acknowledge that you're feeling it, because you just go. You go and you do and you care and you go and you do and you care for others. And so it doesn't even hit you until it really hits you.
Right. Right. Well, I'm so glad you said that, because you're just totally setting us up for the next segment, where we're going to listen to an expert on radical acceptance. Her name is Tara Brock. And we've got about a 3-minute clip that we're going to start with. And she really dives into that whole idea of why and how meditation can actually help us in the moment.
And then we also want to get to overwhelm, where I'm at now, stress, anxiety, overwhelm, and what we can do about it after the short break.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Voss, and I'm with Helen Brand, and we are the hosts of the Empowered Caregiver Show.
Okay, I can't correct your name on Helen Brand.
I think I have to. How many of our hosts, guest names have you messed up? So I think I was doing
all
it
of
a
them.
Little bit. I know. So it was whatever we call a Freudian slip. I wanted you to see what it feels like.
Okay.
I'm just teasing. Well, we were talking last segment about being grounded, because we're really diving deep into what's the difference and the similarities between stress, anxiety, and overwhelm, because both of us are feeling a lot of that right now. And we felt like it was pretty timely. And why have a guest on to talk about something when we're just completely absorbed in our own stress, anxiety, and overwhelm? So we thought we'd talk to each other and share some of our experiences so that other caregivers can relate and hopefully learn a thing or two from the resources we're looking at. You ended last segment, Liza, with talking about being grounded, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And you said it was an important way to deal with anxiety, right?
Yes, yes. And then when you said you're grounded, I was thinking about a kid being like grounded. And then why is that a bad thing? And see, that's where ADD comes in, because now my mind is thinking like, I should have been glad when my parents was grounded me. I was grounded.
Well, isn't that the difference between being an adolescent and a kid and then an adult? Like, I want someone to send me to my room.
Right.
I want someone to say, you are out. You get a timeout. Thank you. I would love one, right? I'd love to be grounded.
I think about that with jail sometimes. I'm like, 3 square meals a day in a bed and nothing to do. I don't know.
I know.
Probably
not the most socially just thing to say, but I do know what you mean. I think all of us have once or twice thought about, is there a way we could just dip out? So that's going to go to what I want to talk about, which is this idea of radical acceptance. Tara Brock is an expert, a guru on this subject, but the piece I'm going to share with you is actually about meditation, because when I went to her website and looked at what she has to offer, she's got a whole section just on caregivers. And I was like, whoop, this lady is with us. I hope it'd be awesome if we could get her on the show someday. And on her website, she pointed out that currently there are more than 43.5 million adults in the U.S. who have provided unpaid care to an adult or child within the last year. And then many more if you look at it from a worldwide standpoint. While caring for our family members can be a deep, healing, and rewarding experience, it can also be very challenging. And finding ways to care for ourselves is essential. Mindfulness meditation, or getting grounded, is a way of paying attention on purpose and with no judgment to whatever is arising within us. Self-compassion arising from mindfulness brings a tender and healing presence to the pain we are carrying. Isn't that deep?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so think about that from a caregiving standpoint, right? It's helping us bring a tender and healing presence to the pain we are carrying, because not only are we carrying our own stuff, we're caring for our care recipient, right? And so we're carrying their pain and suffering too, whether we realize it or not. So together, these practices offer us refuge when we are overwhelmed by stress and give us renewed access to our natural joy and aliveness. Here's part of an interview. Evan, are you set? Evan, our fabulous producer. Here's part of an interview with her where she talks even more about this topic.
make time to meditate when life's demands are overwhelming, like when you're caregiving for elderly family members or for young children?
It's a good one because it's a lot of us. And, you know, we have this society-wide stressor of this underlying sense that I don't have what I need to really cope or manage, that something around the corner is going to be too much. And underneath that is there's never enough time, that sense of never enough time. And it creates this inner sense of rushing and trying to get somewhere other than being right here now. And here's the thing, the care part of the word caregiving, it requires that we be able to come into presence, that we connect with our heart and really with our full being. So just to name, there's definitely seasons where it's difficult to do a long meditation every day, but we can find time to do brief pauses to reconnect. I remember when my son was born, and first 4 or 5 months, like happens to all parents, I was up at all hours and it was really challenging. And my practice was very, very spotty. And I remember one day, you know, a particularly stressful day, and seeing myself so reactive and realizing that whatever money I had in the bank in terms of, you know, backup from my past practice, it was dwindling. I just didn't have much resilience. And I made this commitment that I was going to meditate every day, no matter what. But I had a back door, which was, it didn't matter how long. I could be doing it lying down or walking or drinking tea, as long as in some way I was intentionally using a window of time to be fully here as much as I could, to be present and kind. And so that has lasted. There were days that it'd be the end of the day and I would just sit down and for maybe a minute or two, you know, I'd breathe and say, you know, thank you, bless you, world. But that every day, no matter what, it gives us this rhythm. And I just suggest short pauses if you can't do a long one. I know one woman in that sandwiched kind of experience of having two teens and a mother in a nursing home, her practice was she would listen to a talk, a podcasted talk while she was driving. And before she opened the door to get out and walk in the nursing home, she would just take a few full breaths and say, be here now, be here now. So we have to find these little spaces. Jonathan,
isn't that deep? Be here now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved that she could relate to it from her own personal experience about, even if, you know, we've distinguished that parenting isn't always the same thing as caregiving, there's an overlap, right?
Right.
Because there's these things that need you and you can't control the time, right? And we all have this sense that we don't have enough time, but that she recognized what she had to do was just even give herself a couple moments. I just thought it was really cool. And then talking about that woman who, you know, was when she'd get out of the car, take those deep breaths and just be here now as she was walking into the nursing home.
That actually made me think, as I was listening to it, about my 19-year-old Caden with autism and how, you know, we talk every week how being a caregiver can be hard, which can be, but it also is very rewarding and a joyous opportunity, I guess. And Caden brings that out in me because when I'm with him, he forces me into the now because I don't want to be reactive to him with all my life's problems because he doesn't, I don't want to say he doesn't get it. It's not fair. To be honest, it's not fair to do to anybody, right? But you do right. it. You do it. When you're in a right. mood, it spills out onto those around you. But for him, I'm really mindful on just being present and focusing on what we're talking about and what, you know, what needs to be done, so on and so forth. So, that is the upside. That is one of the upsides of caregiving. If you give yourself that opportunity to be in the now, and if it's in the act of caregiving to, you know, be able to share that experience with your care recipient. But one thing that we didn't talk about going back a step is the overwhelm in the stress, anxiety, and overwhelm. And when I was reading this article that was on WonderMind website, which is a mental health website, back from September of 2022 by Lauren Del Curl, she states that when stress or anxiety go unchecked for too long, it can turn into overwhelm. And this shows up in either two ways, and this really hit home for me. Either you're frantically moving from task to task without actually being productive, or you're frozen and totally unable to do anything, says Dr. Hayes, who's being interviewed in this article. And it's also possible to swing between both versions of overwhelm. So fun, she adds.
Exactly.
Which it is. It's so fun because I feel like that is where I'm at. Frantically going from task to task, not really accomplishing anything, or completely frozen, unable to do anything.
Well, I think it's because it's this vicious cycle, right? Mm-hmm. And as she points out, it's because you're trying to do so much, but you can't accomplish anything. And that leaves you in this puddle of hopelessness. So it can feel like no matter how hard you try, you're powerless to do anything. And that goes back to what we were talking about in the first segment, that what's the feelings behind these like avoidances or responses and reactions we're having to our situation, whether it's a caregiving situation, whether it's a work situation, whether it's a managing a household situation. There's when we're resisting it, when we're not in our flow, right? When we're not in the zone, there's feelings that have got to be there. And so, yeah, there's a puddle of hopelessness and we're powerless, right?
Right. Yeah. And
we feel we're powerless.
One of those feelings, and I think this really hit home for me, is she writes, the tricky thing about overwhelm is it's just often a natural consequence of the culture that we live in that rewards us for doing more and more and more, in which being exhausted is a badge of honor. And I think with my upbringing, there was one thing instilled in me was work ethic. I got that from my parents. You work and you work and work until you can't work anymore. So I kind of like bring it on myself, like game on, right? And then crash. And and now I'm dealing with autoimmune issues, so I crash hard.
Yeah, no, I think it's true. And I do think we do oftentimes look at that person who looks absolutely dead in the eyes, but subtly brags about how they went to the gym at 6, they worked a 12-hour day, and then stayed up late studying to become a certified workaholic, right? But how many gold stars are we awarded for taking care of ourselves? Zero. Yeah. Actually, I think sometimes people judge you when you're taking care of yourself, whether they even are conscious of it. They look at you as being selfish or self-indulgent. And it's like, no, because I think that, yes, the work ethic is important, but so is being in the present, right? I mean, I think we've got these two conflicting value systems that are coming at us in the Western world in the 21st century is we got to keep working. We got to keep doing it all. We got to keep experiencing it all. And there's so much information and there's so much access to stuff. Yet then there's also this, we're all struggling with mental health issues and we all need to just be more grounded and we all need to stay in the moment. Well, that's really a bizarre dichotomy.
I couldn't agree more. And especially the, you are rewarded. I think a lot of people get their identity by working themselves into the ground and not realizing, but you can only do that for so long. And something's got to give. Something's gonna break.
Right. And I think I know that when I was growing up, same kind of messages. And for me, it was a lot around academics and accolades and, you know, GPAs and degrees and all this kind of like performance markers. Mm-hmm. But then when I became older, became a parent, and then when I became a family caregiver to Nicole, well, there isn't any of those accolades. There isn't any of that, like, oh, look at you. You're working so hard at being a caregiver. And so it really did force me into an overwhelm, and I did crash and burn. And I think one of the benefits of that, I mean, I keep reading about things in terms of these hard times are lessons for us, but I have come out of all of this not as motivated to be a workaholic or a perfectionist anymore. It hasn't really served me all that great. So I want to come back in a moment, and I want to talk a little bit more about radical acceptance. It's one of these ideas that Tara Brach is known for, and it's centered in DBT, dialectical behavior therapy. And so this is some long-term, long-lasting strategies we can use to kind of deal with our stress, our anxiety, and our overwhelm. So stick around.
Lay them on me, sister. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show with Liza and Kristen, and we have been talking about stress, anxiety, and overwhelm, and what the differences are and what you can do about it. And I came across a great article that just breaks it down in very plain speak from the WonderMind website back in September of 22. And they have this written as the bottom line, and I'm just going to read it because she did a great job. The bottom line is, you're not wrong thinking that stress, anxiety, and overwhelm feel pretty damn similar. But recognizing the subtle differences of each can help you process them in a more effective way. It also helps us get on the same page about what we're really feeling. And one last thing is, if you're feeling any of these emotions all the damn time, then that's a great reason to go seek some professional support. And she ended the story saying, "You got this."
Which I love, because that's our tagline.
I know. So
I'm getting little truth bumps. Right? Isn't that cool?
Yes. But I can't wait to hear what you have to tell us about DBT.
Well, so this whole idea about seeking out some professional support. When I crashed and burned, I had to get some professional support. So I got connected with the Open Door Center for Change. And I've been participating in a group for DBT. And what we're doing in this group, this dialectical behavior therapy group, is we're actually learning more than like being involved in actually a therapeutic process, because DBT is a bunch of tools. And what DBT is a type of talk therapy that's based in CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy, but it's especially adapted for people who experience emotions very intensely. And that is me.
And right? I can add that is ADD or ADHD. I mean, that is also a symptom, is expressing emotions intensely, but continue.
Interesting. No, yeah. Dialectical is this whole idea about combining opposite ideas. And so what I like about DBT is it focuses on helping people accept the reality of their lives and their behaviors, as well as helping them learn to change their lives, including their unhelpful behaviors, because it's learning how to live in the gray. Dialectical is these opposite ideas, right? The black and the white thinking, the black and the white existing. I didn't realize how much I was a black and white thinker until I started taking these classes, I guess, for the sake of being in this group, right? And so being in this group and learning about these skills, what I've begun to realize is it's not a either or, it's a both and, or it's something in the middle. And that you can actually be happy and sad at the same time. Mm-hmm. You can be anxious and excited at the same time. And understanding that and accepting that is really the key to dealing with all of it. And acceptance is hard. It's really hard. And so what they get to in dialectical behavior therapy is a concept called radical acceptance. And radical acceptance is essentially recognizing that we want to use both our emotions and our logic, right? And that's what's going to help us get through tough situations. We don't always want to be logical and we don't always want to be emotional. If we really want to be in our best selves, we want to be in what's called wise mind. And wise mind, if you think like a Venn diagram, is the part when you overlap logic and emotions. Mm. Yeah, it's cool. When we're accepting, what we're doing is we're just simply acknowledging the moment as it is. There's no judgment involved in acceptance. And in order to accept reality, a client must make a conscious choice to turn toward reality and away from cognitive distortions. They must commit to this acceptance. It is not always easy, and they may have to repeat a skill or mantra several times in order to get to the calmer emotional place. And so for a caregiver, what I think is so important about this radical acceptance is there's so much we have to accept in our caregiving situation because we have so little control.
Exactly.
You know, and I have so little control over what Nicole can do, what Nicole can't do, what Nicole is going to do, right?
Right.
One, because she's her own person, but two, because she's got her own challenges, right? And so dealing with somebody who has autism or an intellectual disability has forced me to recognize that I'm trying to think like her and for her, but I can't be her. And so I have to go to the radical acceptance place of, okay, she is who she is. And she may be developing a screen addiction, or she may be, you know, not living to the best of her ability every day. And that's okay, because neither am I. And so I have to back off that judgment.
Yeah.
No, okay, Chuck, what, well, you don't no, think that I'm leading my best self? No,
I think amen to that, because there's so many times where Caden is just sitting and it makes me anxious. And I think, you know, that goes, it just ties in. Oh, that's where all the anxiety comes from, because caregiving is a lot of a world of unknowns to some degree. You know, even you might know day to day what it takes, but the future planning and whatnot can create a lot of anxiety. And why was I laughing? Because I'm right with you. I
yeah,
I agree
exactly.
with you. Yeah, yeah. Caden's doing things, and you know, he's looking at his phone all day. And it makes me anxious. Oh, this kid needs to be in the community. He needs to be engaged. He needs to. And I'm looking at my phone.
Exactly. Know,
the only reason I saw he was looking at his phone is because I looked up from looking at my phone. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's what you laughed at, because you right. heard me saying, mm-hmm. right, she's not always doing everything she's supposed to be, but am I? Far from it. So mm-mm. why do I expect her to be at that? And then just like the last idea I want to leave with radical acceptance, because we're coming up on the end of the show, is I think it's so forced when we're dealing with people who are dying. Right. And so I know that we've been talking about caregiving the whole show in terms of adult children with disabilities, right. but we need to remember that a lot of our family caregivers are actually dealing with folks that are in their last stages of life. Mm-hmm. And they're really struggling with, is this time to die? When am I going to die? And it's so hard, having gone through that with both of my parents. Now this next month, it'll be 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And realizing that is like, to me, I don't know if this is true for other people, but it's like, that's what stops me in my tracks. I have to accept they're going to die. I have to accept I'm going to die. Right. And so it's like, it just forces it. It's like, this is it. It's happening. I mean, it's the one guarantee. That's what I always tell my kids. It's the one guarantee. We're all going to die.
What a way to end the show. Right?
Yes. That my no, whole point no. is radically accept it. And you know what? As a result, then don't sweat the small stuff.
Don't sweat the small stuff. It is what it is, right? That is my mantra from day to day. My big takeaway from what you said is remove the emotion apart. If you're able to remove the emotion, but part of that gets, you know, realizing that motion is involved, and we can do this. None of this is easy, but together we are stronger. So stay tuned to the Empowered Caregiver. You got this.
You got this.
You got this.
Good night, everybody.